Hello, and welcome to the Og Blog Podcast. I'm your host, as always, the Og Blogger, Nat Gertler, the guy with far too many Peanuts books. And today we've got a nice episode. We're going to have a talk with Mr. Wallace Exman, who was involved with Peanuts Publishing for a number of years. Wallace, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, thanks, Nat.
I'm glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. Now, you had, I take it, a reasonably healthy length career in publishing.
Well, I guess you'd call it that. I started in probably around 1960 and ended up here on Cape Cod about 15 years ago after buying a small publisher up here to do some local publishing. So you do the arithmetic, but it's a number of years, I guess.
It's a number of years, and strangely, you're still 47 years old. I'm impressed. Okay, and at what point did you get involved with Peanuts?
At what point? Well, I was a quarter of the way through that career that I mentioned earlier, which I was with World Publishing Company. I had joined them after working at William Morrow, where I started. I worked with World, and then they were bought by Los Angeles Times Mirror, not to make a long story short, but we were all transferred out to Cleveland, along with my new bride, and we were in Cleveland to do local books of local interest. Henry Holt acquired a company by the name of Reinhardt and Company back in 1960.
Yeah, they were the first publisher to publish Peanut strip reprints, right?
Exactly. Yes. And Reinhardt, that was run by, as a matter of fact, by Mary Roberts Reinhardt and her two sons. But in any case, Reinhardt was bought by Holt, along with Winston, becoming Holt, Reinhardt, and Winston. And with it, and Reinhardt, we began publishing the Peanuts books back in 1954. I think it was about then. The sales manager for the Reinhardt company at that point was a guy by the name of George O'Hara. Of course, when two companies merged, there was two sales managers, and of course, the Holt sales manager went out. So George was kind of left at sea, but he was hired by World as a sales rep out in California. Now, George was a good friend of Schultz. How that started, I don't know, but they got to know each other years back. Holt, at that point, had been publishing Charles Schultz collections, the paperback collections of the Peanut strips, which they acquired when they acquired Reinhardt. So they had Schultz kind of locked up. But along around 1964, Schultz and Bill Melendez, who was an animation professional, decided to get together, and I think the producer's name was Lee Mendelson, to get together to do an animated series starting with the famous Charlie Brown Christmas. Now, at that point, George O'Hara and Sparky, Charles Schultz, were still talking to each other, and George said, well, maybe what can we do with this new Christmas special? Maybe we can do something at World Publishing Company. So, to make a long story short, we bypassed United Feature, who was handling all of Schultz's stuff, and we were given the permission to go ahead and do the Charlie Brown Christmas at World. And I became the editor of that book, and long breath after a long story, that's how I got involved.
Okay, that sounds like a good place to be. You had some interesting people working on the adaptations there. We know who drew a couple of them, that Schultz drew one himself, and a guy named Dale Hale, who used to be working on the Peanuts comic books, drew the Charlie Brown Christmas. But for the rest of them, were you involved in picking the artists, or how was that done?
Well, I met Charles Schultz for the first time. George O'Hara said, you better should come out to California and meet your author. So I went out to California and met Schultz. He was quite a golfer, as you know. Mm-hmm. And I met him at the Bing Crosby Invitational. It was about 1965, I think. He had, by the way, when I went out to visit him a couple of times later, and he had his studio in Sebastopol, he had a little three par right outside his studio. And he'd go out and whack the ball a little bit every so often, when he felt in the need. In any case, I met Schultz out there. We got to be good friends. So when we began doing the adaptations of the television specials and the feature-length specials, I went out to Los Angeles and met Bill Melendez, who was producing these things, and got involved in the before the computer days, what animation is all about, which is a very complicated and time-consuming business. But I got to know them. We picked cells that were going to be used in the films for the books. We reproduced the cells Schultz wrote a storyline to go along with the cells, and that's kind of how those books evolved. End of long story.
You were at World first. How did you end up at Holt?
Well, I went to World, and World was bought by Times Mayor, and they put a lot of new editors in. I was brought back from Cleveland to New York, and the next thing I knew, I was on the street with a couple of other editors because they brought a new editorial staff in. But Holt heard about my relationship, my friendship with Schultz, and I had an interview there, and they hired me, and I think largely because of that. So I got pretty lucky.
That sounds like a good place to land. I actually had an inquiry from one of my podcast listeners the other day. He wanted to know about the covers that were used on the Holt reprint books, whether they were actually drawn by Schultz or whether they were just panels taken from certain strips. If they were original art?
They were original art. I think we did about two or three, at least two or maybe three collections a year in quality paperback. And of course, they were split in two and went to Fawcett for their edition.
Mm-hmm. I actually have talked to you a couple times over the past couple decades. And at one point, you were telling me that you had gotten some of the original art that Schultz had drawn. So I thought... I note that some of the cover or he did a couple of small interior drawings in some of them.
There was one because we worked together on what I call a one-off book, which would be the Dark and Stormy Night, which was when he drew original pieces of art for that particular small book. We had a lot of fun doing that book together, and so he was kind enough to send me a Sunday strip in which Snoopy sits down and begins writing the book. It's a stark and stormy night. A door slams, something happens. And that's been hanging in my house for a long, long time. That's wonderful to have. Because I went out to California and talked with Melendez a couple of times. I was lucky enough to get some of those cells which I had. And, of course... We had some of those covers, which you're familiar with, which I got because they were here in the house. I happened to go into the art department and say, "Are you going to use these or throw them away?" And they said, "Well, why don't you, if you want them?" So I was lucky enough to get a couple of covers too.
That sounds like a sweet thing to have.
Yeah.
Now these days, most comic strip reprints just take starting at day one. They reprint every strip in order. But that wasn't so much the case back then. How did you go about choosing and arranging strips for a book?
Well, we got what were called repros, which were papers that could be reproduced in a printing process when you want to reproduce the strips in a comic page or whatever. So I got repros every week of the daily strips and a separate repro of the Sunday strip. And as all the newspapers who carried Peanuts they got the same stuff. So in any case, I would take the repros home and spread them out on the living room carpet and just try to put through a continuity, make the strips sort of lead one to another. And it wasn't that hard with Schultz. I mean, he was always doing golf things or baseball things and football things, skating things, hockey things, and they all seemed to fit in a certain calendar year. So I could link together a lot of the sports things. And there are a lot of things within the strip that Schultz will be doing every so often, which were Charlie Brown at lunch, I hate lunch or things like that. Mm-hmm. Charlie Brown wanted to go after the little redheaded girl. So I could put some of those strips together and try to make, you know, draw some continuity out of them that they didn't have on as you would read them in the daily newspaper.
At some point, as you were mentioning, Holt did It's a Dark and Stormy Night and Snoopy and the Red Baron and Snoopy and the Sopwith Camel and things like that. Were those things that Schultz brought up or were those things that Holt said, hey, we should have some storybooks?
They were kind of one-offs. And they came from Schultz, basically. I was at Holt before. I came to Holt after the Snoopy and the Red Baron, which really took off. But it did so well that we were wondering maybe we should try something else. And it was all basically his idea. He was the one who came up with the Snoopy and the stuff with Camel and also with...
Snoopy and it was a Dark and Stormy Night. And the last one he did was
right,
I Never
right.
Promised You an Orchard, the Collected Writings of Snoopy, I believe it was called.
And that was that was after me.
You got to work with Charles Schultz a fair bit in a way. What was he like to work with? What kind of guy was he?
Well, he it's kind of a difficult to say, thing to put into words. He was a very quiet man and very introspective, and I always walked around him with tiptoes. I never really knew exactly what to do. He was a wonderful friend, and he was a very warm person and laughed a lot. But I was so much in awe of his, if you go into a studio and there he is at his drawing board making up ideas for a strip, I mean, you just want to hold your breath for me, because I was so much in awe of this man. He was a good man to work with, and turned out to be a good friend, and we kept in touch over the years.
Okay, trying to think, is there anything else I should ask you?
Well, I don't know. One of the people I'm involved with, who were midway, midway between Schultz and me, were the people at United Feature. And one story I always remember was one of the men there who handled the Schultz account, if you put it that way, was a guy named Jim Hennessy, who was a wonderful guy. And we'd go out for lunch a lot. And one of the things they had to do was protect, you know, the Peanuts name and creative being against people stealing it and using it otherwise. I think about that time, this is back in the 60s, in California, who was using Peanuts as an advertising ploy. So in any case, one time we were having lunch in New York, and we were walking down Lexington Avenue, and we were walking past the pastry shop. It was kind of a mom-and-pop pastry shop, and in the window was a cake with Peanuts as a piano and was singing Happy Birthday. Well, they disappeared in that pastry shop. And 2 minutes later, that cake disappeared from the window. And so it even goes to that extent, you know. They were good guys. It was a very interesting time for me.
Sounds good. Well, thank you very much for spending some time with us. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Nat. It was a great pleasure to talk with you.
And so that's it for this episode of the Og Blog Podcast. I'd like to thank Wally Exman. I really would. In fact, what the heck, I'll do it. Thank you, Wally Exman! And if you want to know what this man with a superhero name looks like, there's a photo of him and Schultz in this podcast entry on the blog. There'll be another episode next week, but until then, your assignment is to send me not only your questions, there will be another mailbag episode coming up, but also your suggestions, your concerns, your complaints, and even your thoughts on whether I should set up a tip jar for the podcast. I don't know. It seems like an odd thing for me to do. It's not like I'm living close to the edge. My children will not be going hungry, nor will I be going naked if I don't turn this into a money thing. And frankly, me threatening to go naked if I don't get paid is a particularly harsh form of blackmail. There are some things for which society is not prepared. Or should I be doing some merchandise? Would any of you really want an Og Blog Podcast t-shirt? Lunchbox? Challenge coin? Taco grinder? Anyway, send your questions, suggestions, and comments to questions@aug.com. That's AAUGH.com. And while you're working your email device, how about spreading the word about the podcast? Don't let this be the best-kept secret in podcastum. Podcastery, podcastatoria, whatever. Just tell your friends, okay? This episode has been brought to you by the Committee to Elect Spike as Head Beagle. Vote for Spike. He's got nothing better to do. And until next time, may you not forget to say the word apple in the title, I Never Promised You an Apple Orchard. May your peanuts pastry all be properly licensed. And may all your griefs be good ones.